Dr. William Luther Pierce. The year 2000. The Jewish Mob in America.
Hello. I promised last week that I would tell you in more detail about what organized Jewish criminals are doing in the United States. And that's what I'll do today. Actually, I've discussed this subject with you a few times in the past, especially in my broadcast of May 16, 1998, which was titled Paying the Organizatia. There have been many new developments in Jewish organized crime during the past few years, and although the mass media have carefully avoided talking about these developments, never using the word Jew and referring only to Russian organized crime when they do occasionally mention the subject, a new book was published just a few weeks ago by Little Brown and Company, which provides an up-to-date and reasonably good introduction to the topic of Jewish organized crime. I'll refer occasionally to the book during today's broadcast. The title of the book is Red Mafia: How the Russian Mob Has Invaded America. Interestingly enough, the author of the book, Robert Friedman, is a Jew himself, which just goes to show that when there's money to be made, whether in selling books or pushing drugs, Jews will even turn on each other. Certainly the Jewish gangsters turn on each other often enough in Friedman's account. Both in Russia and in the United States, members of the Jewish mobs machine gun and bomb each other today even more readily than the members of the Italian gangs used to shoot it out in Chicago back in the 1930s. And although Friedman adopts the standard media ploy of referring to the gangsters as Russians, he really cannot help revealing that nearly all of them are Jews. For example, when he comments on the reluctance of the FBI and local and state police to crack down on the so-called Russian Mafia, or even to investigate it, he notes, and I quote, "In general, state and federal law enforcement agencies were loath to go after Russian mobsters, instead devoting their energies to bagging Italian wise guys. And because the Russian mob was mostly Jewish, it was a political hot potato, especially in the New York area." End quote. Friedman even points out that the mainstream, respectable Jewish organizations, such as the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit, pressured the police agencies to take it easy on their kinsmen in the Jewish crime gangs, claiming that any publicity associated with investigations or arrests would, quote, foster anti-Semitism and lead the Gentile public to protest against the continued influx of Jewish gangsters into the United States from the Soviet Union as refugees. Even after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, however, writes Friedman, and again I quote, "Jewish organizations continued to lobby the Justice Department to downplay the threat posed by the Russian mob. The Russian mafia has the lowest priority on the criminal pecking order," admitted FBI spokesman Joe Valiquette during a 1992 interview. End quote. Well, I'm sure it hasn't been too difficult lobbying the Clinton Justice Department to be nice to Jewish gangsters, since they have been the source of so much of Clinton's campaign money. The Anti-Defamation League, of course, has a long history of cozy associations with Jewish crime bosses and with the FBI, giving the Jewish pressure group a great advantage in pulling the necessary strings to shelter the most important of the Jewish gangsters from prosecution. And it wasn't just the Anti-Defamation League which sheltered the flood of Jewish thugs, extortionists, murderers, drug dealers, white slavers, and racketeers pouring in from Russia. The Jewish religious establishment in America did everything it could to facilitate the influx. That's a noteworthy point, because the Jewish gangsters are portrayed by apologists for the Jews as being barely Jewish, Jews with no real consciousness of being Jewish, while the Jewish religious establishment is portrayed as being a pious bunch of rabbis, especially the Orthodox Jewish establishment. Actually, it was in the Orthodox establishment that the gangsters formed their most useful connections. Friedman points out that the first of the Jewish mob's godfathers in the United States, Yevsi Agron, owed his crime career to a politically connected Orthodox rabbi, Ronald Greenwald. Rabbi Greenwald had gotten his political connections working for Richard Nixon's 1972 re-election campaign. He was Nixon's ambassador to the Jewish community. In the 1980s, Rabbi Greenwald became mob boss Agron's One Jew think tank and facilitator. Mob insiders report that most of Agron's rackets were planned in Rabbi Greenwald's Manhattan office. A leading mob member in Toronto, Joseph Sigaloff, is also a leader in Canada's Orthodox Jewish community and the publisher of an influential Orthodox newspaper. So if these Jewish mobsters get invited to Democratic Party fundraisers and serve as advisors to Republican re-election committees and are in tight with the Orthodox Jewish religious establishment, and if the FBI thinks they're not really as important as the Italian gangsters, maybe we shouldn't worry about them either. Maybe they're not really such bad guys. Maybe they're just nice Jewish boys who sometimes step over the line and break the law. Well, the Italian gangsters certainly don't look at them that way. A member of the John Gotti gang in New York was recorded with a wiretap warning an acquaintance, quote, "We Italians will kill you, but the Russians are crazy. They'll kill your whole family," end quote. This view also is shared by policemen who have to deal with the Jews. A New York City policeman told Friedman, and I quote, "The Russians are ruthless and crazy. It's a bad combination. They'll shoot you just to see if their gun works." One leading Jewish gangster in the United States, Monya Elson, was a hitman, a contract killer, before he became a gang boss. He began by murdering Ukrainians in Kishinev, his hometown. Then he went to Moscow and murdered Russians. Then he came to America and began murdering Americans. He boasts that he has more than 100 confirmed kills. And it's not just that the Jews are more ruthless, vicious, and bloodthirsty than the members of the Italian mafia. They are smarter, better organized, better protected politically, and much greedier. While the mafia is stealing $1 million, the Jews are stealing $1 billion. Finally, there are many more Jewish gangsters in America than Italian mafia members. By the early 1990s, there already were some 5,000 hardcore Jewish gangsters from the former Soviet Union operating in the New York area alone. That's more than the members of all of the Italian mafia families in the United States. And the Jews are continuing to pour into the country from Russia. The current flood began nearly 30 years ago when corrupt politicians in the Congress, working with mainstream Jewish organizations and the Jewish media, enacted legislation which opened a sewer line from the Soviet Jewish underworld to America. The late Washington Democratic Senator Henry Jackson, who never went to the bathroom without getting permission from the Jews, spearheaded the effort to tie trade agreements between the United States and the Soviet Union to an increase in the flow of Jews from the Soviet Union to the United States. The pretext for giving special status to Jews, for using U.S. economic power to persuade the Soviet government to permit Jews to leave when no one else could leave, for allowing the Jews who left to come to the United States without the usual immigration background checks, even for having American taxpayers foot the bill for flying them over here and then paying for subsidized housing, food stamps and other special benefits for them. All of this was based on the pretext that Jews were persecuted in the Soviet Union. The mass media over here portrayed the Jews in the Soviet Union as the principal victims of communism rather than as its originators and its principal beneficiaries. That's an especially egregious example of the Jews' big lie technique, in which they brazenly stand the truth on its head, because with their monopoly control of the media, there is almost no one to contradict them. Friedman interviewed a well-known Jewish gangster in Miami, known to his associates as Tarzan. His real name is Ludwig Feinberg. He came to the United States from Ukraine, a country whose natives have traditionally hated the Jews for very good reasons. Feinberg is not a religious Jew, but he certainly is very Jewish, the kind of Jew the real Ukrainians instinctively despise. But was Feinberg persecuted in Ukraine? Hardly. Friedman reports, and I quote, "To Feinberg, being Jewish simply meant having certain privileges. Jews were the richest people in town, he told me. Jews had cars. Jews had money. Jews lived in nice apartments. We were comfortable. My mother had nice clothes and jewelry. We took a vacation once a year to Odessa, a stunning city with a boardwalk and gorgeous beaches. It was filled with mobsters and entertainers. It was a city with a Jewish flavor." End of quote. Feinberg is describing his life as a Jew in Ukraine in the 1960s and 1970s, at the height of the supposed persecution of Jews by the communist regime. There was persecution, all right, but it was the Ukrainians who were persecuted by the Jews, not the other way around. The same story is told by other Jewish gangsters. Marat Balagala, the Jewish godfather of organized crime who succeeded Yevsi Agron in New York after the latter was assassinated, also came from Ukraine. He told Friedman, and I quote, "Jews had some of the best positions in the country. They were the big artists, musicians. They had big money," end of quote. The Soviet government did crack down on dissidents of all races, of course, and this included those Jews who tried to undermine the government's policy in the Middle East because they considered it pro-Arab, just as it included Ukrainian nationalists and other ethnic separatist groups. But it did not include members of the Jewish organized crime gangs who were not dissidents. The Jewish criminals and the Jews generally were happy with the situation in the Soviet Union because it allowed them to exploit the Russians and the Ukrainians. They already were living high on the hog in the Soviet Union when their Jewish kinsmen in the United States opened the border to the promised land for them, and they seized the opportunity to live even higher on the hog. The collapse of communism made things worse for the real Russians and Ukrainians because it destroyed the order in their countries and allowed the Jews to run wild, plundering and pillaging at will. But it did not dampen the desire of many of them to come to the United States and plunder and pillage even more. Friedman quotes Boris Urov, formerly the chief investigator of major crimes for the Russian Attorney General. Urov said, and I quote, "It's wonderful that the Iron Curtain is gone, but it was a shield for the West. Now we've opened the gates, and this is very dangerous for the world. America is getting Russian criminals. Nobody will have the resources to stop them. You people in the West don't know our mafia yet. You will. You will." End quote. The name of the game in Russia after the breakup of the USSR in 1991 was privatization. It was praised by the bought politicians and the controlled media in the West as a giant step toward a free enterprise society, with the inefficiently managed state-owned enterprises and natural resources being sold to private businessmen who, spurred by the profit motive, would manage everything much more efficiently, resulting in a great increase in Russian productivity and prosperity. That was the theory. Actually, privatization was a massive looting of Russia's wealth by the Jews. The Jewish bureaucrats inside the government made sweetheart deals with the Jewish mobsters outside the government, who in any case were the only citizens with the capital to buy anything. Everything which previously had been owned, in theory, by all the people collectively and managed by the state, ended up in the hands of the Jews, and the Russian people had nothing, not even in theory. Instead of becoming more prosperous, the Russian economy has declined every year since the end of communism in 1991. The Russian people have been reduced to a state of beggary, while Russian and Ukrainian peasants kill one another fighting over a few potatoes in the fields. In Moscow and St. Petersburg and Odessa, Jews cruise the boulevards in their Mercedes, wearing diamonds and furs, eating in glitzy restaurants where a meal costs more than a real Russian earns in a month, and patronizing sex clubs stocked with beautiful Russian women. The Jews aren't even trying to use the stolen wealth of Russia to get the country back on its feet. Like a plague of locusts, they have devoured everything they could, and the rest they have moved out of the country. Hundreds of billions of dollars of Russia's capital is taken out of the country every year by the Jews as the looting continues. It's not just that they want to be the richest people in a rejuvenated capitalist Russia. Their greed is purely destructive. It's a grab-and-run operation. When the U.S. government, through the International Monetary Fund, sends billions of dollars in loans to Russia, it simply disappears. The Jews squirrel it away, and it's never seen again in Russia. And over here, the politicians pretend that they don't know what's going on. But they do know what's going on. The CIA's spies send a steady stream of reports back to Washington. They reported that Boris Yeltsin and the crowd around him were all on the take and were controlled by the Organizacija. But the Bush administration and then the Clinton administration pretended not to know. All the Bushites and the Clintonistas cared about was that Yeltsin was the candidate being promoted by the Jews in Russia. And, of course, by the Jew-controlled media over here, and so they promoted him too. I don't know whether or not you remember when Yeltsin was running for re-election in 1996, but I do. All of the Jewish media people over here were sweating it. They were afraid that a real Russian nationalist, a Russian patriot, might win. The Clinton government was holding out the promise of more money for Russia only if Yeltsin won. In fact, Bill Clinton was campaigning as hard for Yeltsin's re-election as Yeltsin was. I'll tell you what would have happened if an honest and intelligent Russian nationalist had won instead of Yeltsin. He would have replaced the key leaders in the army and the secret police with people he could trust. He would have done this carefully but quickly. And then he would have sealed Russia's borders and halted communications with the rest of the world for perhaps 48 hours. At the end of that time, there would not have been a Jew or a collaborator with the Jews left alive in all of Russia. The Russian Orthodox Church would make him a saint, and the Russian people would remember him with gratitude and affection for as long as the Russian nation lasted. But of course, with all of the Jew-controlled media in Russia pushing hard for Yeltsin and with plenty of vote stealing going on, Yeltsin was reelected and the looting of Russia continued. And in America, the Jewish mob has continued to consolidate its power. The Miami gangster, Ludwig Feinberg, was really gloating when he explained to Friedman the difference between the Jewish situation in Russia and the American situation and what the Jewish gangsters have in mind for America. The Jews of Russia are cunning predators, he explained. That's the way they have survived the hard conditions there for centuries. But the Americans are soft and trusting, like sheep ready to be fleeced and slaughtered. American laws were made only to be broken by the Jews. A New York police detective lamented to Friedman, and I quote, "Why are we being victimized by non-citizens who can run to Israel or Russia and can't be extradited? The Russian gangsters have told me that they've come here to suck our country dry. How did the Russian mob become so entrenched? They are into Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid fraud. Why is it that every ambulance service in Brooklyn is now run by the Russian mob? Why are so many of their doctors practicing without a license? They have invaded Wall Street from boiler room operations to brokerage houses. Nothing is too small for them to steal. Even the guys with the multi-million dollar Medicare scam still have to have their food stamps." End of quote. I'll add two comments to Friedman's report on Jewish organized crime in America. First, it will not be stopped, regardless of whether Al Gore or George Bush wins the White House this year. The FBI has essentially put the Italian mafia out of business in the United States during the past decade, but it won't put the Jewish mafia out of business, and the reason is that the Jews have vastly more money at their disposal for corrupting the system than the Italians ever did, and America is rapidly becoming as corruptible as Russia. In fact, I have a strong suspicion that the reason the FBI suddenly made a major effort to cripple the Italian mafia was to make room for the Jews. The Italians and the Sicilians thought they had the fix in, but the Jews trumped them with a bigger fix. In the sort of a country America has become since the Second World War, any criminal organization run by intelligent men with hundreds of billions of dollars at their disposal to corrupt the system and with the protection of the mass media can't be stopped by governmental action. Individual Jewish gangsters will be arrested and have been arrested in the past, but the sort of decisive action needed to stop Jewish crime cold will not be taken. My second comment is that the Jewish mafia does not operate in a vacuum. It operates within the Jewish community as a whole. It operates with the support of the Jewish establishment, from the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit to Hollywood and the New York Times. It also operates with the support of the Christian establishment, from Billy Graham up to the Pope. These support groups won't put up a fuss if the FBI arrests a Jewish contract killer or a Jewish extortionist or two now and then. But any realistic effort to stamp out the whole Kahila will have all of the support groups screaming bloody murder. To use other words, what we must deal with is not a criminal problem, but a Jewish problem. The problem will be solved only after this fact is generally understood. Meanwhile, the American sheep had better resign themselves to a good fleecing. Thanks for being with me again today.